This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. You know, I forgot my notes today at home. So I think this is like episode 228, and I was going to talk about some new research into intelligence. It was pretty interesting. And I'm trying to decide if I can actually do it without my notes. And I think the answer to that is no. So, what that means is that I'm going to have to wing this today. It's been really a very quiet week. Got a chance to have some talks with some buddies, and that's always cool and good. I had one buddy who I didn't get a chance to get together with last week for breakfast. He was in Oshkosh for the big air show. So we got together on Tuesday morning. We talked about that, how they got up there, and that was all very interesting. And another one of my buddies I didn't actually get together with, but he's a new father. And we had some interesting email exchanges this week. And maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. I am plugging along on the book on Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp. You never know until you just get the thing done. You know, you get it written and then you go back and decide what needs to be tweaked. I have one arc. Whenever you write, normally you want your characters to move somewhere. You want them to not just be static, but to there to be growth. And I've got growth in several of the characters, and now I'm getting to the point where I'm realizing, oh yeah, this is like the third book in the series, and who am I going to show growth for, and then who am I just going to leave in their destitution? And I've got one character, a young boy character, that I wasn't really planning on doing much with, but then, now that I've gotten into it, I'm thinking, oh, he's 13. You know, there's not really not usually much growth that goes on with 13. I mean, that age, at that age, boys are pretty much just hormone-driven, and, you know, there's not really much you can do with them at that point. But I don't know, I gotta work on that. But, some of my main characters, there's some nice things tying together, so it's good. I'm technically done with the book, because I'm over 50,000 words, ha! But I have more to write, so this is gonna go 55, 60. I think I may have mentioned that last week, but it's definitely gonna go 55 or 60. Everything else is puttering along. I had a nice conversation this week with another friend that and we were talking about the creative process. And I was saying how important the creative process is in my life and how it becomes more and more important with every book I write. Because you can get into all sorts of philosophical discussions about, is there a God, and how does God prove himself, and how do we know there's a God, and all that sort of thing. But there is something about creativity in the arts. There's something about there being nothing, and then there is something. And there are things that, as you're creating, you don't even know they're coming. And then just suddenly they show up. Things that were not, and yet now they are. And there's a feeling that comes along with that. I've mentioned this before, but there's a feeling that comes along with that that's it's hard to get away from. It's hard to deny. That it just feels so much like there's something else there. And I think I mentioned before, I was reading a book on creativity once, and the lady was really doing her best to explain that away. How that you've got all these subsystems in the brain, and you know, inspiration comes from this subsystem, and it's buried deep below the conscious level, and that's why it just feels like it's coming out of nowhere. And okay, well, that's fine. That's fine. But wow, this creative process, it's fun. And I was describing that to a friend, and my friend was struggling, has been struggling for some time with some issues in life, and is feeling really kind of dejected at the moment, really frustrated, because these issues, these struggling issues, have continued for so long. And I was recommending to my friend to find a creative outlet. Actually, this particular friend, I know what their creative outlet is. It's music. Find a creative outlet. Write songs. Do something. Because the process of that, while it is terrifying, often terrifying, the process of that causes something to happen internally that makes you feel more connected. And just, you know, every time I get a book finished, especially when I go back and read through it the first time, and I look at all that has come out of my little pea brain, it's just so cool. Obviously, I like my own stuff. If I didn't like my own writing, that would be bad. But I love my own stuff, and when I see it, I'm proud of it. Because I know that I've battled through to get there. I know I have spent hour after hour after hour writing to get there. And it's fun. And between the writing, between making a decent living, between the wonderful relationship with my wife, and the wonderful relationship with my kids and grandkids, you know, this is a good life. And while I used to always say, you know, if Jesus calls me, I'm going, and that's still true. I still look for him. And I could set it all aside. There, if he gave me a choice and said, you know, it doesn't make any difference to me. You can come back to heaven right now, or you can wait for a little while. At this point in my life, I really think I would wait for a little while. If it didn't make any difference to him. Now, if he, you know, said, look, you know, the way things are going, you can either come with me now or your whole life's going to fall apart and it's going to be terrible. And, you know, I can't guarantee later on whether you're going to make it. Well, it'd be no question. I'd just go now. But things are good enough now that It's good. It just is fun. I enjoy having friends. I enjoy writing. I enjoy my marriage. It's good. It's good. Anyways, one friend this week was going through an interesting process. And as part of that, I mentioned to him that there are things, sorry, I just yawned, that there are things that you learn from having a child that you cannot learn in any other way. This last week, there was a news item about a 2-year-old who had some sort of fatal advanced disease, and I think it was his parents really wanted to get married before he died, and so he was going to be the best man at their wedding. And you know, it's just a heartbreaking story when you see a child that young suffering that much. And obviously, the thoughts turn to prayer and the thoughts turn to divine intervention. And my friend was telling me how that story was affecting him. How it was really moving him. And part of the reason it was is because he had just had a little boy in fairly recent months. And it's really interesting what happens to our hearts when we have children. How our hearts open up. Hopefully they open up. And we see things in a different way, and we empathize in a different way because we've had children. And that process of empathy, I think it changes how we look at things. What I've tried to do is, after I had the experience of being a parent, is try to then take that experience and move it around to where when I'm expecting certain behavior from God, that I say, you know, God the parent, what would his behavior be? I remember some months ago I was talking to another buddy. We were exploring this idea of universalism. And I've already said, I absolutely would love to believe in universalism. Why wouldn't anyone want to believe in universalism? That all will be saved. Why wouldn't we all want to believe that? But I can't because of free will. It's the thing that stops me from believing in universalism. But I'm pretty close to universalism. It's just, I think there's a whole lot more people are going to make it than we think are going to make it. And I attribute that directly to the Father's love. And my friend and I were talking about the Father's love in sort of an abstract way. And my friend was saying, well, yeah, but what if someone, you know, what if he doesn't believe in God? And what if shakes his fist at God and, you know, is always perpetually doing things that he knows is wrong or she knows is wrong? You know, doesn't God just at some point? And we were talking and talking and talking about love. And finally I said, okay, but I have a daughter. And my daughter comes to me and says, I don't believe in you anymore, and I'm not going to do what you say, and I'm not going to follow your path. Thankfully, my daughter has never done that. I said, the fact of the matter is, I look at her, and I still love her. And I say, okay, well, I understand. I understand you're mad. I understand this is a phase you're going through. But you know what? I'm for you. I'm with you. I love you. I'm never going to stop loving you. Always want to be with you. Always want you to be with me. And when I said that, my friend stopped and thought about it. And he said, well, that's a really good point. And the reason that he understood that point is because he was a father. And so it's really fascinating to see the progression of experiences that we have in life and how those progressive experiences map down into our understanding of our relationship with God. I think there are things that you learn about your relationship with God that you can't learn any other way than by being married to a member of the opposite sex or opposite gender, whatever you want to say. Because men and women are so different. And that process of building a relationship where there is such difference, I think it just helps us to understand God. And in the same way, when we as human beings have children, and we raise those children, and we see the sacrifices and struggles and the joy and sometimes sorrow and the rebellion and the reunion and all those things that go along with having children. When you see that process, it just helps you see things from God's perspective a little bit and to consider why He is so long-suffering and why He is so merciful. Why He is so gracious. Because I know a lot of good fathers, thankfully. And those fathers, they are gracious and merciful. And if an earthly father can be gracious and merciful, how much more can a heavenly father? My friend also obviously was very reflective when he was thinking about this 2-year-old dying. Very concerned for the family. And all those things are valuable experiences. And sometimes in the middle of that, we're tempted to, and often do, wonder and wish that God would intervene or wish that God would explain why He isn't intervening. And I was chatting with my daughter about this, and I had forwarded on to my buddy the YouTube video 99 Balloons. And if you haven't seen it, I would recommend that you go watch it. 99 Balloons. It's extremely touching. About a sad, sad story. I'm getting my mail. Sad, sad story. Of a little boy who had a life-threatening disease. They diagnosed him in the womb, and they didn't really expect him to live past birth. And yet, he held on for 99 days. And the couple, ugh. You know, it's all told from the perspective of a husband's diary. And you can hear in his voice the... You can hear that they are in this extremely emotional circumstance. I'm backing into my garage. And yet, through it all, what they choose to do is not rail and shake their fist at the heavens, but they choose to make the absolute most that they can of every day that they have with their little boy. And it's such a touching video. And I was talking to my daughter, and she was saying, yeah, and she said, you know, the way the parents respond to this, and the way they're grateful for what they have, as opposed to being angry that the heavens don't part and God doesn't come down and change things. And they live right through the middle of that pain. And Lizzie and I were talking about the fact, you know, that there are things that you can't learn any other way than by living straight through the middle of things sometimes. And yet, through it all, God strengthens. We put one foot in front of the other. When we come out on the other side, we're stronger. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.